Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Would you like to reach hundreds of thousands of athletic subscribers? Who wouldn't? Our lot are great. They're intelligent. They have demonstrably long attention spans for all of those long reads. And that means they're almost certainly the ABC ones you're looking for. Imagine your brand front and centre on the Totally Football Show, or Talk of the Devils, or Football Clichés. You can advertise with us now. Our highly skilled and effortlessly charming commercial team are waiting to hear from you, whether you want a single ad on View from the Lane or full title sponsorship on our Women's World Cup show. We've got something for everyone. Contact partnerships@theathletic.com. That's partnerships@theathletic.com.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hayes Show.
Welcome to the show, the Phil Hayes Show, brought to you by The Athletic, along with The Square Ball. Dan here from The Square Ball with Phil Hayes from The Athletic. To read Phil's articles, closing out the transfer window, which we're going to discuss today as well, theathletic.com/Leeds Pod, the new year price on there. Phil, theathletic.com/Leeds Pod. What can we read? What are we going to talk about today? Should we break with tradition and start with transfers?
Yes. Yeah, we never speak about transfers ever on this podcast, but we usually get into the football first, so let's talk about the money. What can people read? There will be a piece on Weston McKennie coming up on how that deal was done with Juventus, because that does look like it is going to cross the line very, very shortly. We should probably timestamp this and say it's 2 o'clock on Monday afternoon, our time in the UK. McKennie is in the country for a medical. That deal is agreed with Juventus. Obviously needs to pass his medical before it can go through, but we'll sign after that or be in well. Along with Diego Montero, young centre-back from Servette in Switzerland. He's also in the country and is also undergoing medical tests before he joins. So a busy old day, a busy old weekend, and that without even touching on Jack Harrison or Diego Llorente.
Yes, so the transfer deadline, it's late tomorrow, isn't it? It's Tuesday, 11 o'clock, the deadline, yes. I believe. And then there's the whole deal sheets thing that we hear a lot about towards it. Let's hope we don't get involved in deal sheets, Phil. Should we start with Weston McKennie then? Because we spoke over the last week and said, you know, if it was down to us, we would add a midfielder to the squad. And it looks like not only are they adding a midfielder to the squad, they're adding a Champions League midfielder to the squad at quite a hefty price somewhere further down the line.
Yeah, I think that's the point about McKennie, and people who know him have been making the point that there's been interest in McKennie previously, and there has been some from England, from the Premier League in the past. But McKennie obviously thinks of himself as a Champions League player, and even though Juventus are in a spell of trouble at the moment, to say the least, after this investigation into their financial management and the 15-point deduction they've had, they've been a dominant club in Italy for a long time, and McKennie, certainly in his earlier years there, was very used to that, was used to Juventus competing for big trophies regularly. But he's coming to Leeds, who clearly are not a Champions League club at the moment, and are a long way from being a Champions League club, both in terms of league position and financial clout, I would say. But evidently the vision has been sold to him in a way that he's accepted and been happy with. It is going to be a loan deal to begin with, to the end of the season. There's an option in there for Leeds to take him permanently in the summer. Will cost them around about £30 million. The intention and the plan would absolutely be to sign him permanently. And I fully expect that to happen unless something strange goes on in the next few months. The one thing, you know, that would absolutely avoid that being triggered would be Leeds being relegated. And to an extent, actually, when you look at the deal, which might confuse people to some extent, because with the Juventus's current situation, you would assume that they would have wanted the money and would have wanted the money fairly quickly. And it also seemed quite likely that they would look for an obligation rather than an option to make sure that McKennie was earning them some money somewhere further down the line, if not now. But from their point of view, I think they see this as likely to pay out anyway because Leeds are so keen on McKennie and would want to keep him in the summer. I think they feel that if he plays well in the Premier League and Leeds aren't able to do the deal or don't do the deal or the option isn't activated, then they'll still have a very valuable asset who, you know, whose price will be decent and who they can make cash from. But also to see this from Leeds' point of view, there is obviously big risk in paying £30 million for a player when, you know, you're not certain of staying in the division. And if you get relegated, as would have been the case with Phillips and Rafinha, players of that ilk, players of that quality, almost invariably have relegation release clauses in their deals, which mean that they go at a lower price than potentially you bought them for, but also than they're actually valued at according to true market value. So it does protect Leeds as well. And I think when push came to shove over the weekend, it seemed like it got complicated Friday night, but then discussions on Saturday morning moved it to the point where by lunchtime on Saturday, Max Allegri at Juventus was saying McKennie won't be involved in the game that they had against Monza on Sunday because in effect a transfer was agreed. It pushed it to the point where I think everybody could actually see how this would work for them. And McKennie not least, you know, he clearly wants this move. He's clearly happy to do it. And as I was saying at the outset, if the medical goes according to plan, then this will be, you know, big signing number three.
In terms of the risk, there's a fascinating kind of aspect to that, isn't there? Because really all football transfers are risk versus reward, aren't they? And I look immediately to the example of Newcastle last year, who effectively spent their way out of trouble. And you could see sort of echoes of that in what Leeds have tried to do here. They're taking that risk. They're assuming some risk now. Speculate to accumulate, if you like, is another way of phrasing it, perhaps, Phil, where they're hoping now that by adding this quality to the squad, and it's shaping up to be a good window, do you think? They expect to climb the table now.
I think a very good window, a really proactive window. And probably since the structure of transfer windows was set up and arranged by FIFA properly, probably the most active January Leeds have ever had, or certainly the most active we can remember. The priorities for them were left-sided defender. So, you know, left-back in theory, although Max Fuber has been playing as a left-sided centre-back, feels a little bit, particularly with Diego Llorente moving on, and we'll get into that in a second, but it feels as if there's more and more chance of Fuber actually being left-sided centre-back as opposed to left-back. But he can play at left-back. So, you know, to all intents and purposes, they have provided themselves with more cover there. They needed a forward. They got Jorginho Ruta, who I really liked the look of what I saw of him on Saturday. Granted, it was Accrington, but even so, you know, just watching him in isolation, I thought there were good signs coming from him. So they've got themselves a forward. But I think they did need a central midfielder. And not just because Matthijs Kleek has moved on, you sort of have to bear in mind with Kleek that whereas with somebody like McKennie, he seems very versatile. He can play box to box. He can play quite a deep lying role if he needs to. A deep lying position never felt to me like a position that really suited Matthijs Kleek. He needed to be further forward, almost as a blend between an 8 and a 10, somewhere in that mould. And if you look at the squad as it is now, prior to McKennie signing, you have Adam Forshaw, whose fitness hasn't let him play much at all again this season. It's been, you know, problematic, hasn't been in the mix, wasn't at the weekend again. So your first port of call when it comes to changing the midfield via the bench has been Sam Greenwood, who, you know, up until the last stages of last season was regarded by most people as a forward, you know, centre forward, someone who played up front, goal scorer, and is being remodeled as a central midfielder. But I think that is a risky option to lean on too heavily and to lean on for too long. I think if you're honest about the way the squad's structured, there's absolutely room for another centre mid. And I think there is room for an experienced one, you know, somebody proven like McKennie. And granted, McKennie's quite young still. He's 24. So it's not as if he's been around the block 100 times. But he's got proven pedigree and he's got a background of playing at a high level in Italy and in Europe as well. So to my mind, you know, this combined with the summer window has changed the squad pretty significantly. You're talking about 8 first-team signings, which is a lot. You know, it is a shift. And for a club who've said many times over the years that January isn't when they particularly like to do business, that value isn't always great at this time of year, it does feel like a bit of a shift and it does feel like a break from tradition. And given, okay, McKennie will fall financially if he signs permanently into the next window, you know, it would go down as a summer transfer on a permanent basis.
And presumably the next ownership.
Well, possibly, yeah. I mean, that would depend on timing, obviously. But if those two things fell into place around about the same time, then yes. But it is still a commitment in this month to, you'll give or take, £70 million worth of first-team player between Verber, Reuter and McKennie. And that's a significant outlay. And I know football quite often makes £70 million not look like a huge amount of money. But for a club like Leeds, it is a lot. And for a club in the bottom half of the Premier League, it's a lot of money. And, you know, the proof of the pudding will be in how these three players play. But I think it's been a really good window. I do think it's been a really good window. And I think it's almost made better by the fact that they've found a taker for Diego Llorente as well, who, you know, to my mind, has never really settled at Elland Road, has never really convinced at Elland Road. And you know, with Verber coming in, I think it has to be said that there are better centre-backs in the squad.
Just in terms of specifically replacing Matt Click in the squad, I mean, I love Matt Click to pieces and I would quite like us to have kept him, but you know, nothing stays still in football, does it? You've replaced a 32-year-old fringe player with a 24-year-old Champions League level midfielder who's going to go straight into the starting 11. It's an upgrade in the sense of the shape of the overall squad, isn't it?
I think this is how you present what you're doing as a plan and a project and I guess a logical sense of progression when it comes to the evolution of the squad. Part of the reason that people were concerned about Cleek going, and I felt the same, was because of the fact that he did still have the potential to be influential in that role. It did still feel like there could be a role for him, even though I never felt that he really fitted into Marsh's style or Marsh's tactical framework. But also because him going meant that they looked lighter in midfield than they had been before. But I think it would be wrong to pretend that Cleek now is still the Cleek at his peak as he was, you know, back in kind of 2020 when he was on that long run of games under Bielsa. And I think if Cleek is going and you're bringing in Weston McKennie, very few people would say that that's not an extremely good trade. And I think very few people would say that they're not happy to see that happen, not because they want Cleek to go, but because you do feel like it's an upgrade in the sense that a player who is almost 10 years younger than him, you know, and still to hit his peak coming in, and a player, in his 30s now, who's going to be moving on beyond his peak, heading off to MLS, it starts to make more sense. And I think will make sense to most people who look at it. And I think I wouldn't have expected them necessarily to have gone this far in this window when it comes to expenditure. I certainly wouldn't expect them to go significantly further than this. And I think Montero will probably be the last incoming that we see beyond McKennie. But I'll say it again, I think it's a good window. And I do think it's given them a squad which should definitely be staying up.
In terms of Llorente, yeah, I have to say he started okay, didn't he, Llorente? But maybe the change in style management hasn't entirely meshed with him, because he's gone from looking fairly composed to somebody who, like when you look back to Brentford away this season, who has at times been terrifying in that defence, bless him.
Yeah, just to fill people in, and this was a surprise this morning, but Llorente is in Italy at the moment. He's going to join Roma on loan. I was told this morning that Leeds had been working to get an obligation in the deal. I think it will be announced as with a view to a permanent, but they're confident, I think, that Roma will take him permanently in the summer. And they're indicating that they expect to recoup most, if not all, of the £80 million that they spent on him to get him from Real Sociedad back in 2020. And obviously the interesting thing with Llorente is that we're a month on, almost exactly, from him signing a new contract at Leeds, taking him to 2026. And you remember the discussion we were having about Leeds thinking that the general cost of centre-backs was going up, that part of the market was becoming expensive. that by extending Llorente's deal, and it confused a lot of us, the motivation for that, it was protecting his value and I guess hiking up his value to the highest level that it could be at. I think you're seeing now the rationale behind that, which is not to pretend that any of us saw Llorente signing a deal on December the 23rd and then leaving before the end of January. But as it pans out, I know people will question him because of the way he's played, some of his form. You're right that he had little periods where he looked settled, but not long enough really to make you think that there was, you know, an automatic first choice centre back there. But he is still a Spain international. He has played in Liga. He's played in the Premier League. He's got a fairly long contract. And I guess on that basis, it gives him some intrinsic value. Whether or not we'll see him again at Leeds is hard to say. I think the plan is not. But as it stands, he should be unveiled by Roma later on this evening. I mean, it's interesting because even though, you know, you're looking, even if we consider that McKennie, if we added him to this window, if we assumed that he was signing permanently at the end of this loan, and we added him to this window as a £30 million signing, the net spend for the season, including the summer, would be somewhere in the region of, you know, kind of £60 million, £65 million, because of the money that came in from Rafinha and Phillips and was paid up front and was able to fund almost all of the summer business. If you cut McKennie out of that equation and say that he will come further down the line, so you run his fee into, say, the summer window instead, as you should, then you're actually talking about a net fee of about £35 million in total, £30 million, something like that. So the expenditure hasn't been huge in that sense, because there has been the money coming in from Phillips and Rafinha. But what you always have to remember with Leeds is that they do backweight a lot of the structured deals that they do, which is to say that they pay more in terms of instalments owed for players later in the contracts than they do at the start of it. So there will be bills lining up. There will be money that's due to be paid for, you know, for example, the players who came in 2020 when they moved to the level of signing Rodrigo and Llorente and Rafinha and others. Rafinha clearly gone now, but players who are still here, Robin Koch, you know, who will have been signed on instalments. That is money that they have to cover, money that they have to find. And, you know, FFP is a constant battle for everybody in the Premier League. You have to be careful.
So our new centre-back signing then, who presumably is coming in to add to the squad, more from a young perspective, he's going to go into the 21s initially, Diego Montero. Yeah. How do you see this one?
I think they look at Montero in the way that they looked at Nonto, in that he'll need time to develop. He'll be given time in the
not 21. Premier League ready, Phil, you mean?
Well, you see, this is the thing. You joke, but actually, I think they see him in both the way they saw Nonto initially, as in needs time to develop, you know, long-term signing, everything else. But I think they also look at Montero and think that he's somebody who could develop very, very quickly and could probably push himself into first-team contention very, very quickly. I think it's unlikely he'll make the same sort of splash that Nonto has, because I think the chances of him playing for the first team are vastly reduced in comparison to the way that Nonto has been needed. But they do like Montero a lot. He's 18. He's had a little bit of first team experience in Switzerland. They think he's a kind of modern centre back, very good ball player, very good in possession. Interesting one, but I think one that will be a much slower burn than many that have come in.
We'll get to the Accrington game shortly, Phil. Let's just wrap up some of the transfer stuff first. McKennie, fingers crossed that's all good. Some stuff going on the other way. Should we talk maybe Gelhardt and Cresswell? Because Joe Gelhardt now at Sunderland, not Wigan, as seemed likely to be the destination.
Did look very likely. I think it would have been a nostalgic move for him, and he was very tempted, seemed to be swaying towards that one for a while. But there were other offers on the table, and I don't doubt that people around him will have been telling him to take his time and to think carefully about it. I mean, in the case of Sunderland, you're talking about a club there who are right in the mix for the playoffs. And I think at Wigan, it wasn't as if the football wouldn't have been live. You know, they're fighting relegation. They needed his goals. They needed results. But, you know, people will have seen that Kola Touré was sacked at the back end of last week. So that more and more starts to look like a fairly rash move, I think, given the other options that were available to him. Sunderland's a really decent fit, I reckon. There's plenty to play for there. They're a good team, really, really good coach in Tony Mowbray as well, who I've got a lot of time for. And, you know, I was listening to Mowbray after the FA Cup game they had against Fulham, where they played well and ran Fulham close. And he said quite openly afterwards, you know, I'm not under any pressure to get results here. I'm not under any pressure to get us into the playoffs or to get us promoted. Club are just interested in us developing young players. And they do seem to have a really, really good crop up at Sunderland. Gilhart's added to that, albeit temporarily. I mean, this isn't, there's no option in this deal, certainly no obligation or anything like that. Leeds still want him back and still see him as part of the longer-term picture, just not someone who's going to be particularly involved at the moment. But I think that's a good move for him, and it's very hard not to feel that it's a better move than Wigan.
Especially with Ross Stewart picking up that injury that could potentially rule him out for a little bit of time over the weekend there, Phil.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where Gilhart, if he's playing and if he's starting and if, you know, it's him who Sunderland are looking to for goals, that's where the pressure comes on, and that's where you see how he performs. And that, I think, is what will test him more. The thing with Wigan was that if he'd gone there and they got cut adrift and they'd been a lot, you know, had gone down at a fairly early stage, if it just had not worked out and not happened for them, then you question how much of an impact that move has on him, apart from keeping him ticking over and giving him minutes in games. Whereas at Sunderland, there's a lot riding on this season for them. And I know that Mowbray is saying, you know, he's not under pressure to deliver promotion, but they've got a chance. You know, they really are in contention. So, yeah, and I think Leeds will be very happy if that, you know, if that does him good, because it has been difficult for him, I think, to find his form and to get on any sort of rhythm or on any sort of role at the moment. And I've also felt a little bit like recently, hard to know whether Leeds and Marsh really know where he fits at the moment, if that makes sense. I don't know if you feel the same, but you look at when he comes on, when he plays, whereas with other players, the roles seem a bit more defined, or you kind of know where they're going to be. With Gilhart, it's like trying to find that niche in the middle, but it being a bit of a battle for him at the moment.
Yeah, I was sent some questions through from A Love Supreme, which is the Sunderland equivalent of the Square Ball. Just questions about him, and I said exactly that. Where does he fit in that? And I said, I'm not quite sure. We don't know yet whether he's a 9 or maybe a 9.5 or a 10. And would he be better served working, playing off another striker, working in a 2, that kind of thing? We just genuinely don't know, because he's not had the game time for us to establish that properly yet. Because he's quite a maverick talent, isn't he? His Gilhart.
Streetwise,
streetwise, very natural talent. But we need to now find where he fits in terms of the structures within a football team in the Premier League, don't we?
And that's what the loan might do for him, is that aside from giving him games and hopefully getting him some goals, might help a little bit more to define exactly what Gilhart is.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, host of the Athletic Football Podcast. It's the final week of January, and that sound you can hear is clubs frantically trying to get deals over the line before the deadline closes on Tuesday night. Myself, David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, and our raft of club experts will be all across the biggest moves this week, and we'll discuss the fallout when the window shuts. So just search for the Athletic Football Podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to your pods.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
And Charlie Creswell, then, there's still a lot of talk of him leaving permanently, perhaps.
Yeah, still at Millwall at the moment, and we're very, very close to the deadline. Coventry with the team being linked with him this week. There has been other permanent interest from the Championship as well. The recall clause that Leeds had in his deal, his loan deal down at at Millwall has elapsed, that's expired. So they don't actually have the right of recall. But what tends to happen in these circumstances is that if there was a permanent offer suddenly on the table, which Leeds wanted to accept, and also which Creswell wanted to get involved in, then it tends to be the case that everybody comes to an arrangement whereby these things are severed and the player is allowed to pursue other options. That isn't happening at this stage. Gary Rowett was asked about him, said, Millwall manager said, as far as he was concerned, he felt like Creswell was going to stay. So what, I think that's probably one to keep an eye on, but certainly having asked this morning, it didn't feel like it was close to something happening there.
Just realised, Phil, we haven't spoken about Jack Harrison, which is one of those other rumours that's bubbling away.
There's so much going on. I always remember you tweeting from the Square Ball account saying, this was back in the days of Ken Bates, saying transfer deadline day, or as it's known in Leeds, Monday, you know, and that's an old joke now. But I think at the time that was, you know, quite well received. I think people thought you were quite a good comedian with that. And it stuck in my head because that is exactly how it used to be. You know, you got to deadline day and it would be a case of, you know, what we're doing, is there any chance of any late deals? The answer always seemed to be
Simon's war chest.
Not really. It's busy at Leeds. It's been a busy month and it's a busy finish between, you know, McKennie, Montero, Llorente and Harrison. Yeah, no, there's been a lot of talk over the weekend and late last week about Leicester's interest in Harrison, which is very real. And the situation Harrison's in is complicated slightly by his contract, which is down to the last 18 months. And you almost feel that at this stage, if Leeds are being sensible, one of two things has to happen. Either they sell him and take as much money as they can for him at this point on the basis that come the summer, if he is down to 12 months, his value is going to be diminished quite significantly. Or they retain him through this through the deadline and make sure that very quickly they get him tied to a new contract. And my understanding is that talks on that front are arranged or are planned for the other side of the window. It will just be, you know, that is on the assumption that Harrison is still here. Leeds haven't accepted anything from Leicester. I think everybody knows that Leicester would pay him more money than Leeds would be able to pay. They do have a higher wage structure there. But that's been one which, over the weekend and even today, it is a little bit difficult to call. I think the gut feeling of everybody is that he will stay because Leeds generally want him to stay, you know, across the board. And speaking to Jesse Marsh, that's been quite apparent, I think, that he wants Harrison as part of the plans. But I think if circumstances were to come where Harrison said, look, actually, I'd like a fresh challenge and I'd like to go. And I'm not suggesting he said that. I certainly haven't been told that he said that. But if that was to happen, then I think you for a club in this position, you get into the discussion of what do we do for the best, given where his contract's at and given the financial considerations that we've got to make. So certainly, you know, we've asked Marsh twice about this now, press conference on Thursday and post-match after Accrington as well. And the answer on both occasions was, I want him to stay. And I thought fairly crucially on Saturday as well, he was saying that in his view, Harrison isn't itching to go. You know, it's not as if Harrison is agitating and stamping his feet and saying, I want to get out of here. But, you know, this point in the window is always where strange things happen.
That's why I asked about maybe a financial fair play imperative in part one, because if there is a need to sort of rebalance things a little bit, then selling somebody a sacrificial lamb at some point, it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, not saying it makes sense to sell him from a football perspective. I would definitely keep him, but you wonder if there's something else at play there.
Well, if they badly needed the money, I think they would get this done. You know, it's there to happen. Leicester have obviously done Tete from Lyon, but they would be open to taking Harrison at the right price. And again, our understanding is that there was a bid in from them late last week. But Leeds don't seem to be rushing to get rid at all. And, you know, if that was if they needed money and that was their out, this is one that you think they would have got going quite soon. You know, they would have got the wheels turning on it and they would have said, okay, if we're doing this, let's get it done. Everything that's been said gives you the impression that they'll be pretty happy more than pretty happy. They will be pleased if they get to the deadline and Harrison is still here.
As you touched on in part one, Phil, Jorginho Arruda made his debut at the weekend. He's one who's definitely come in. And as you said as well, some really, really encouraging in signs there. I really like the look of him. Just the stuff that he was doing, the positions he was taking up, picking up the ball and running with it. There was that moment where in the first half where he just kind of They picked it up behind the defender, knocked it past him and just went. And it wasn't a case of straightforward kick and rush. It was a really inventive touch that took him wide on the left. There's a lot to like there, isn't there?
That was the basis of a post-match piece, you know, just looking at him, watching him, kind of passing a verdict on what we thought at first glance. And, you know, there are a fair number of people who said to me, it's Accrington, it's League One, you know, who really cares? But I kind of felt that the fact that it was Accrington in the FA Cup, the sort of game that Leeds have embarrassed themselves in more than once over the years, I thought that was kind of the point. You know, that was quite a hard game in its own way to be introduced as a debutant, especially for somebody who hasn't played for 2 months. You know, you go back to November for his last appearance in the Bundesliga because of the break for the World Cup. So it's opposition who you expect him to shine against because he should, you know, at the price Leeds have paid. And actually, I don't know how it looked on the telly. We had a very, very low vantage point in the stadium, so really it wasn't that easy to judge. But the pitch looked okay to me. You know, when we got there, the pitch looked relatively decent in comparison to Heston, let's say that, you know, and the swamp that was. And I thought there was a lot to like. Okay, he missed a couple of chances. He should have scored with his first touch. I mean, when that fell to him, I was thinking, bingo, he's going to stick this away, get right in this piece, and then it goes wide of the post. And that was probably the only thing that was lacking. But I'm with you. He was strong. He was quick when he needed to be. He can clearly beat a man. And I did like the way in which, you know, when Leeds were working on the left, he was drifting in from the right, you know, kind of making himself a centre forward in moments where it was him who was looking for the ball to feet, you know, and the chance to shoot. We're going to be able to judge him far better, clearly, as this strays into Premier League football. And I would suggest not least, you know, two back-to-back games against Manchester United now. That if he plays in those, that'll be a really, really good example of what he can do against that kind of level of opposition. But as a, you know, as a start to get himself going, I thought Saturday was good. I did.
Yeah, I enjoyed Saturday overall as an experience as well. It was a nice. Yeah. I mean, I didn't go. I was watching on the telly, but it was a nice throwback to the League One days and a reminder of the place from where we've came and we must never return, Phil. But at least this is a cup tie anyway.
It was job done, I felt, to quote Billy Davies. And I get that Accrington had moments in the game, and they did. You know, they had chances, and you know, there was naturally the moment where they broke from an attacking Leeds corner and almost scored. Yes, but Leeds needed to get through that tie. Scored three excellent goals. They really did. And for all that it was by no stretch a complete performance, I think it was exactly what you're looking for in a game like that at a venue like that. And you're into the fifth round. You've done it with, let's be honest, minimal fuss. You know, it wasn't as if from 2-0 onwards, that game was, or the result was in much doubt at all. And yeah, I think Marsh was right to be happy with it. And, you know, a good draw, and, you know, Leeds could go further than this without a doubt.
Ball number 16 in the draw for the fifth round, Phil.
I mean, we were joking on Saturday that you beat, you get past Cardiff, you beat Accrington, and then you draw City away in the fifth round. And, you know, if that happens, what can you do realistically?
I think it'll be ball five. It'll be Man United away, almost certainly. What I really want is Leeds at home against whoever the weakest team in the tournament.
Three times with Man United in the space of about 3 weeks. The entire police corps of the UK booking time off after that.
It'd be like the post-promotion sort of 1991 era, you know, where we just kept playing them over and over again after promotion. That couple of seasons, but in the end we ended up winning the league title, and I think they struggled with the fixture pile up towards the end of the 91-92 season because they knocked us out of the cups.
Be like that mad run against Arsenal as well. I remember speaking to Lee Dixon about that and him saying, I just felt like for about 4 weeks I had Gordon Strachan in me. You
know, I was going to say, for the benefit of anybody not old enough to remember that or who wasn't around at that time, whatever it may be, in 1991, wasn't it, we played them four times. This was before it was replay and penalties. You just kept on playing until you got a decider in this, and it was four games in total. It went to a third replay.
Yeah, it kept going and going and going. So yeah, I mean, they do. This is probably actually precisely the point where if you're going to do well in the competition, you need the draw to be good to you. You know, there's going to come a stage in it where you just have to beat really good sides. You know, that's just how it is. But I think round five, you can you know, you can get a favour at this point. And there are, I think, plenty of draws in there that Leeds would be very, very happy with. And surely to God, we're due a game at Ellen Road.
Well, that's it, isn't it? We're not going to get one now. Of course we're not.
Well, no, now that I've said that, it's going to be as far away as possible on the south coast. But the laws of chance and all that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You would have thought that, wouldn't you? But the laws of chance have had us going away from home for pretty much every tie since the dinosaurs were around. But it's just nice to be in this in the cup at this stage, isn't it? And I think, do you think it does Marsh some favours as well? It helps to buy him a little bit of credit that, like Saturday, I was never at any point in that game particularly worried about us not winning it. I felt we always had it in us to win that game.
I think it just avoids the alternative, which is unflattering results that do you no good at all. When I did the piece building up to that game, you know, looking back at the kind of stories of Histon and everything else, one of the recurring themes in it was the fact that more than one manager was sacked within about a month of a really bad FA Cup defeat. And it's not as if the FA Cup defeat was the thing that did for them specifically, but it certainly didn't help. And in every occasion, it was pushing them onto the slippery slope. And, you know, Marsh came into this month under pressure. He's been under pressure, you know, at points of it, particularly Villa when there were the chance against him. So it doesn't help in any way to get knocked out of the FA Cup, especially when you and the club have been talking about the fact that you want to run in it, you know, and you want to make progress. So they have, and, you know, they've actually very rarely been to the fifth round, certainly in recent memory. It's unusual for them to be at this stage. And I think what you're doing is you're keeping, you know, keeping results going or getting results on the board at a time when the club are also adding to the squad. So doing McKennie and doing Rutter and doing Max Verber as well. And it allows you, I think, to feel that you're coming out of the window in better shape than you went into it. And that is going to be massively put to the test, obviously, away at Forest. And then in the games against Manchester United, not to mention, you know, Southampton and Everton to come after that. This is a critical period coming up. And I think the strength of the squad now provides fewer and fewer excuses for poor form and poor results. But the strength of the squad also lends itself to the possibility that the results will pick up and there will be points on the board. And I think seeing managers under pressure is not particularly pleasant. I have to say, it's not that enjoyable. And there's nothing good to be taken from it. And I think he's stuck at it, Marsh. He has. He's done his best to ride this out. And I think it's good for him to have had a result like that at the weekend when things just went to plan.
Once again, you took the words out of my mouth, because I was going to say there is nowhere to hide now, is there really, with the amount of investment that's been in the squad and having pretty much addressed head on the weaknesses or the perceived deficiencies in the squad. Still probably need a left back, but you know, maybe one for the summer, that one.
Yeah, I think so. And who's to say actually that Verber on the left side of defence won't help what's going on outside him if it's somebody else at left back? That is probably something to revisit further down the line. But I think for now, somebody said to me on Twitter, you know, we still need to do a left back, because if Verber's playing in that position, then we haven't got one. But I don't think you can feasibly ask the club to do more in this window than they have already, you know, in terms of finance and the individual players they've gone for. And I think as well, you know, it has been a consistent process of backing Marsh specifically. We mentioned last week, you know, Chris Armour's coming in as his assistant. McKennie is a player he'll know incredibly well through US circles, you know, in the same way that he did Aronson and Tyler Adams as well. Although it's worth saying with McKennie that he's somebody that Orta, it turns out, has had his eye on since he was at Schalke. You know, Orta does this a lot where he takes a shine to a player, takes an interest in a player and tracks them. And a bit like Robin Koch at Freiburg, you know, it can end up coming in. The boat can come in many years after the scouting first starts. And that seems to be the case with this. But, you know, likewise, Verber, somebody who Marsh knows incredibly well, they do seem to still be recruiting very much for the tactical strategy that is there. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, on the one hand, you say it fewer places to hide, but I think on the other, it certainly strengthens the hand of what you've got to pick from.
In terms of things from a fan perspective, I do feel like, and I said this on the previous show, that we're starting to maybe gain a little bit of momentum. And I know Marsh is kind of, he's taken a few pelters for suggesting that momentum is building, because the run of results is still not great. And it's padded a little bit by victories in the cup against lower league opposition. But in terms of giving fans something to get behind, something to believe in, doing this in the January window, showing that willingness, tackling it aggressively, gives the sense that Leeds mean business again, doesn't it? We're not just waiting and hoping to get through to the end of the season and then we'll kick on from there. It shows a willingness to address what needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I think so. I think it shows common sense in doing what the squad is asking you to do. You know, McKennie's probably the best example of that. As much as they needed a striker, I needed somebody to cover at left back, and you know, Verba falls into that category. I think McKennie coming in reflects the fact, as we said, that behind Rocca and Adams, you're really talking about Sam Greenwood as your next in line from the bench. And whether or not Greenwood goes on to be a quality central midfielder, he's still massively in the experimentation stage at this point, I think. And you have JB as well, you know, but likewise, not somebody who has a vast amount of first team football behind them, not somebody that at this point you can necessarily be certain about when it comes to relying on them in the Premier League. McKennie is far more of a sure thing. And, you know, it interests me now really whether we're going to see Leeds switch longer term and permanently to 4-3-3 and three across the middle, because I guarantee you that McKennie is not coming here to sit on the bench. And I think he will have asked very direct questions before coming about what his role is going to be. But, you know, neither Rocca nor Adams are going to want to make way either. And I suspect, you know, if it is those three across the middle, that would make sense to my mind, or some structure that has all three of them in the team. And one of the questions I was kind of posing after Accrington is, who do you pick as your front three or your front four at the moment? There are so many options, and actually so many players playing pretty well. I actually thought Bamford was the pick of the bunch on Saturday at Accrington. That assist to the second goal was absolutely brilliant. But more to the point, and he didn't score, but more to the point, he was doing Bamford things. He was making those runs into the channel, you know, drifting off to pull centre-backs about. He was linking up the play well. You start to look at him and think, if actual Patrick Bamford is available to you again, and you've got Rodrigo who's scoring goals, and you've got Nonto, and you've got Somerville who was due to start training again yesterday, and you've got Ruter, you've got Harrison, you've got Aronson who could play far better than he is at the moment, you know, and could come into form. Pick me your front three.
Tough one, isn't it? I wonder if maybe this is where we start to see a little bit more rotation and shifting of formations, perhaps a little bit as well, where we opt for a 4-3-3 for that extra solidity in midfield against, you know, one opponent, but then another opponent, we might go more attacking and put three behind a striker, something like that.
And it's a bench with options, without a doubt, as well. You know, attacking options there. I think I still hear criticism of the, you know, the individual players at the back and the question of whether Leeds are strong enough defensively. I think that's as much a question of structure as it is personnel. But midfield forward, a lot of good players there, I feel, and a lot of potential on top of that.
The proverbial nice problem to have, Phil.
Yes.
And that wraps up the Monday edition of the Phil Hay Show. We are twice weekly until the back end of March. We're going to return later on in the week. We will wrap up what happened with the closing of the window. Not expecting any surprises, are we, of course?
It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it. I think Llorente was one, without a doubt. But it looks as if McKennie and Montero should get done. Llorente heads to Roma. Keep an eye on Creswell. Keep an eye on Harrison. We'll reconvene on Thursday. We'll see where we are.
Yeah, at the Phil Hay Show on Twitter, theathletic.com/LeedsPod for our sign-up offer. And we will return later in the week. Ta-ra.
The Phil Hay Show.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.